The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. We're hoping, if we have time, I've been meaning to get back to the discussion we started on sports a few days ago. What was that, Monday maybe? But that article from Imprimis and just some of the scriptures that talk about, in particular, the Apostle Paul's love for sports, or at least love for the sports analogy. So we'll reserve some of that material for the second segment. Well, yesterday we went through that Axios story about the Red Mirage. And if you didn't hear that program yesterday, you can go to that at thetrumpet.com and listen if you'd like to. But this is basically the last hope for the radical left to try to steal the election. And they're out there telling people, look, November 3rd, when it gets here, it may look like Donald Trump has won. It may even look like he wins in a landslide. But that's okay. Remember what Hillary Clinton said. Don't you dare concede, Joe Biden. Don't concede on election night. Because this can drag on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And as long as we can fight them in the courts and harvest as many ballots as possible, we can win this in the end. So Axios is out there saying that according to their model, well, that's exactly what's going to happen. Donald Trump's going to be way ahead on election night, but then in come the ballots. Days after, weeks after, and we'll see it turn around. So the New York Times then, picking up on that, and as if right on cue, I guess, it says, what if early results in swing states on November 3rd show President Trump ahead and he declares victory before heavily Democrat mail-in votes, which he has falsely linked with fraud, are fully counted? There's no fraud. There's never any fraud in mail-in ballots. That's the New York Times. So they're picking up with this Red Mirage strategy. The Times says, would the president, joined by allies in the GOP and the news media, sow distrust in the election by arguing that mail ballots that shift states away from him are rigged? It says the nightmare scenario in November is worth preparing for, many Democrats say. Of course many Democrats say this. They know, as I said a week or two ago, Joe Biden is not the front runner, never mind the polls. They know he's not the front runner. They know that Donald Trump is way out in front. And so they're preparing for the nightmare scenario. They're preparing for agitating, just like they've been doing all summer. They want to upend the system. And that would include the election system. So first it was the Russian collusion hoax, the Steele dossier, all of those fabrications, all of those lies. Talk about Russian interference. It was coming from the other side, the Democrat side. That went on for years, the Mueller witch hunt, 2 years. Destroying people like Mike Flynn. Served his country for 30-some years. Took him down in the witch hunt. Then they had all the talking heads, Democrats as well. What was it, back in 2017, 2018? Bringing up the 25th Amendment, whether or not the president was mentally fit for office. They talked about the Emoluments Clause. That should bring him down. They were in the process of all the witch hunting. They were subverting the FISA courts. There was that ridiculous Ukraine phone call. And then the even more ridiculous impeachment proceeding that followed. What a circus. And now this year, coronavirus, a violent uprising, and none of that's worked. None of that has taken him down. The violent uprising has been a spectacular backfire. And so now it's the Red Mirage. Now it's the Red Mirage. If he wins on November 3rd, well, we'll find a way to steal it. Attorney General Barr was on with Wolf Blitzer last night on CNN talking about the mail-in ballots. And Mr. Barr usually is pretty calm and collected, but here you can see him. It might even be more so in the second clip that we have. But here you see him get pretty riled up on this subject. Clip one.
Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the voter list when everyone knows those voter lists are inaccurate. People who should get them don't get them, which is what has been one of the major complaints in states that have tried this in municipal elections. And people who get them are not the right people. They're people who have replaced the previous occupant, and they can make them out. And sometimes multiple ballots come to the same address with a whole several generations of occupants. Do you think that's a way to run a vote?
That's the Attorney General asking Wolf Blitzer, is that the way to run a vote? There's been all kinds of cases of fraud that's just gone on and on and on. And really, if you look at what is happening in the United States, I mentioned how they've gone after this president, but even just this year with the coronavirus and now the violent uprising, and then this, talking about this, just blitzing all these states with ballots, going to, as he said, just showing up to any household under the wrong name, the wrong address, or whatever it might could be. The U.S. is descending into third world status in so many ways. There still is the mirage, I suppose. There is the temporary resurgence. We've talked about that at length. But you look at what is happening with voting, with this pandemic, with what's happening in our cities. There was a couple of stories in the news stack today about U.S. Marshals finding 25 missing children in Ohio over the last 2 weeks. And just a week before that, they found 39 missing children in Georgia. And this is all part of a sex trafficking scheme, most likely. Something like 23,000, I should say, child runaways in America, missing children. And a lot of this, as Sam was mentioning earlier, the fact that there's this kind of sex trafficking going on in the U.S. Of course, the problem's even worse when you look at it internationally. But here, this sort of thing is just, well, it's so common, it's so routine, that it barely gets any attention. It barely gets any attention. This is from Mises Wire. It says it's increasingly clear to even the, speaking of third world status, it's increasingly clear to even the average American that if riots come to your neighborhood, you are on your own. It says the message received is increasingly this. If your plan is to wait until the police show up to provide protection, be prepared to wait a long time. Consequently, as violence appears to surge in American cities, millions of Americans have become first-time gun owners. Second Amendment rights. So Americans, by the millions, they're taking matters into their own hands. You talk about something like a banana republic, a third world country. This article said that 12 million guns were bought in the first 7 months of 2020, and that's up 70% from last year. A 70% increase in handgun purchases just in the first 7 months of this year. It estimates that there's something like 5 million first-time gun owners, people buying guns for the first time. Why now? Why in 2020? Well, because they see the violence, they see the mayhem, they see the corruption in government. They see law enforcement with their hands tied. And they see all this this cheating and stealing, this plotting going on. Here's Bill Barr again from Wolf Blitzer last night, clip two.
Wolf, this is playing with fire. This is playing with fire. We're a very closely divided country here. And if people have to have confidence in the results of the election and the legitimacy of the government, and people trying to change the rules to this methodology, which as a matter of logic is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous. And the people are playing with fire.
They had a story in the New York Post, by the way, yesterday or the day before, where this former Democrat operative, he talked about it in this article about where they've done it on the local levels in New Jersey, in Massachusetts. It's certainly done in California, happens every election cycle. Six or eight Republicans that are way out in front on the night of the election. But then days later, a week later, lo and behold, the Democrats, it's always the Democrats coming from behind. This is even before pandemic. This is years ago. This is before COVID-19. Harvesting ballots. It's happened already on the local level, on the state level. Now they want to take it up to the national level. And as the Attorney General said, you're playing with fire. But see, that's what the radical left is quite happy to do. They're doing it quite literally out on the streets. Playing with fire. A trail of destruction. Destroying American cities. Joel Hilliker, by the way, he had a trumpet brief last night. Perspective on America's genocide. Here they use one incident in a bustling nation of 330 million, as I've said before. And if you're looking for one incident to use as an excuse to riot, as an excuse to burn cities down, as an excuse to loot, as an excuse to steal and to kill, you're going to be able to find something. But just compare it to what happens in the rest of the world. He said police have somewhere between 50, speaking of America here, but he says police have somewhere between 50 million and 200 million interactions with citizens every year. Of these, about 1,000 involved deadly shootings. Last year, 28 unarmed black Americans were killed by police out of 44 million black Americans, less than 1 in 1.5 million, and virtually all of whom, though unarmed, were committing crimes or posing a deadly threat. See, most of them, even the ones that are shot without a weapon, those that don't have a weapon, they're attacking police in some form or fashion. It's rare, in other words, it's rare for a policeman to shoot an unarmed black man. It's very rare. See, and he says here, yet these people are calling this a genocide. No one is arguing that America's police don't make mistakes or that there aren't some bad police. But think of the Rohingya for perspective. He gave an example earlier on in his trumpet brief about where there actually is genocide, about where there actually is police brutality, and how that those people would probably give anything that they could to be in the United States. How about some perspective? You're not going to get that from the radical left. You're not going to get it from the Democrat media complex. They're there inciting the violence, or at least they were, right up until, what was it, 4 days ago, five days ago? When all of the internal polling, it must have really been a shock to them to see just how many votes Donald Trump was peeling away from Democratic strongholds for them to come out last weekend. That's all that it was. And to just turn on a dime and to say, look, you remember those clips from Don Lemon? We've got to change our strategy here, because this is really hurting us in the polls. Well, maybe we should stop. Maybe we should consider stopping the rioting if it's going to hurt us politically. They weren't saying that back in June or July. They were promoting it. They were pushing it. They were inciting it. This was Van Jones on CNN last night calling for a moratorium on these riots. Clip three.
this campaign is going well for Donald Trump because we're not talking about the economic devastation that people are experiencing or the virus, really. And I think it's time for us to recognize we are in a very perilous situation if you want to see a change in November. The question is, how are Democrats and progressives going to deal with the edges of violence in our own movement? I think that Joe Biden can reach, can actually begin to move his own movement in a better direction. We need a national moratorium on these nighttime marches. We've got to get off of this conversation around unrest and back to the conversation around the literally millions of people who are suffering from the Trump economy and the mishandling of the virus.
He calls them nighttime marches, but does admit at least that we need to call for a moratorium on these marches because it's hurting us politically. That's what he's saying. We've got to get the focus back on COVID-19. He went on to say that, okay, there's a couple hundred businesses that have suffered because of the rioting, because of the protests, as he calls them. But there's thousands and thousands that are suffering because of the pandemic. And that's something we can blame Donald Trump for. That's something that we can put on Donald Trump. So they're just out there, like Don Lemon. They're just out there saying, look, let's stop the rioting for now. You know, let's suspend it for now and try to get the upper hand politically. It really is shameful that they won't just come right out at the start and say there's absolutely no excuse for rioting. No excuse for the destruction of personal property or businesses. And it's just been escalating since Kenosha and then over into Portland this past weekend. Let's get the focus back on the pandemic. Let's get the focus back on the virus. The whole thing, it's an attack. It's a political attack. They talk about these protests that are hijacked. It's like they came along and hijacked the pandemic. They hijacked the Black Lives Matter movement in order to destroy their political opponents. That's the whole aim here. Or if it's not in the United States, it's this ridiculous power grab like you see down in Australia. We've covered this story, particularly in Victoria, Australia. I didn't have a chance to get the updated figures. The number of people that have died from COVID-19 in Australia, but it's ridiculously low, comparatively speaking. And yet the crackdown in Victoria, there was an incident that was all over the news down there. This woman in Victoria, arrested, handcuffed, right in her own home, right in front of her children. It's actually a pregnant woman. But she's arrested in her home because she made a Facebook post endorsing an anti-lockdown protest. So she just wanted to go to a protest. But it's the wrong protest. You can't protest the lockdown. You can only protest for racial justice, for racial equality. Sky News played some footage of the police showing up. I think this woman lives in Melbourne. But here they are, coming into her house, putting the arrest warrant on her counter, and basically saying you're going to be arrested for a Facebook posting. Clip 7.
That's a search warrant.
Search warrant for what?
Now, what I will explain to you is if you want to listen, you got your phone going?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Right. Now, you're under arrest in relation to incitement.
Incitement.
Yep. Now, you're not obliged to say or do anything, but anything you say or do may be given in evidence.
Excuse me, incitement for what? What on earth? Excuse me, what on earth?
Just put your phone down.
Can you,
in
like,
record this? To... I'm in my pajamas.
What's
I
this?
An ultrasound in an hour.
Yeah, she's pregnant, so...
Well, I'll take it easy.
What's this about?
If I have an ultrasound
just let me finish.
In an hour.
Let me finish and I'll explain. It's in relation to a Facebook post, in relation to a lockdown protest you put on... for Saturday.
Yeah, and I wasn't breaking any laws by doing
you
that.
You are actually. You are breaking law. That's why I'm arresting you in relation to
insult. How can you arrest
children,
her? That's
in front of my two children.
Can't you just say to her, take the post down? Like, come on.
I'm happy to delete the post. This is ridiculous. Right.
Yeah.
The Facebook post to, I guess they're having a protest on Saturday in Melbourne. And So this is captured on video, and it didn't take long for Alan Jones to weigh in on Sky News Australia. Here's the next clip.
Well, thankfully, I'm not the only Australian who thinks this is appalling, disgusting, and disgraceful. A pregnant woman, forced into tears, handcuffed in her pyjamas in front of her children. I think it's in Ballarat for quote-unquote incitement. The only person guilty of incitement is the Premier of Victoria. In his outlandish grab for power, his disdain of any accountability, is forcing people to behaviour simply designed to take back their freedom. This woman is a victim of the inexcusable and unlimited powers given to the Victorian police. Everyone knew it had come to this. You can only push people so far. Wherein lies the violence in what you've just seen? The verbal and intimidatory behaviour towards a pregnant mother is a form of violence the like of which no Australian will tolerate. Go, Daniel Andrews, and go tonight.
He dresses nice, by the way. I need to spruce things up a little bit. I love watching Mr. Jones from Sky News Australia. Anyway, he was very serious, so back on point here. Here he is talking of this outlandish grab for power. Daniel Andrews, he's the premier down there, and you don't hear much from the prime minister, surprisingly, coming out and denouncing this sort of activity and behavior. One sort of protest works fine, never mind social distancing or restrictions of any kind. But if you're promoting a protest against these lockdowns, then you're going to be arrested. No tolerance. They had their first, this also made the news just this week, they had their first death related to these unconstitutional border closures. This mother who was about to have twins and wanted to go across the border to a nearby Queensland hospital, but she couldn't because of these restrictions. So instead she had to wait 16 hours to fly to a Sydney hospital. 16 hours, and when she finally got there, one of the babies died. One of her twins died. She couldn't even get to a hospital. This is how crazy. It's lunacy. It's derangement. It's an outlandish grab for power. And there's no judgment. There's no wisdom or judgment. It's just this radical left-wing outlandish grab. A power grab. This was the police following the arrest of that pregnant woman. Here they are basically saying, look, we're going to crack down even harder. Clip 8.
Staying at home and not leaving home to protest is the best way to ensure that we can recover our lives, recover our jobs, and recover some sense of normality. Don't let selfish behaviour get in the way of this. If, however, you do take the selfish option and leave home to protest, we'll be ready for you. So while I won't go into the details of our tactics and our plans on the day, be assured we'll be ready for you. And we'll be ready for you not only in the city, but we'll be ready for you when you leave home and hop on public transport or use other means to come into the city. We will be ready to meet you.
Can you imagine him saying the same thing to Antifa? Antifa sends out the message on Facebook that, hey, we're getting together at Melbourne. We're going to protest for racial justice. And everybody turn out. They would not come out that strongly. In fact, Sky News pointed out the blatant double standard when it comes to protesting in Victoria. Here's clip 10.
But back in June, against the law, when tens of thousands of Black Lives Matter activists actually protest, when they march through the streets of Melbourne, well, Assistant Commissioner, you sang a very different tune then, didn't you? On the 3rd of June, you said that police would exercise their discretion when it came to issuing fines, and you did. You only issued 3 fines, despite over 10,000-plus protesters. And you also said, we don't want to be in enforcement mode, being Robocop. Here I am, all these years living under the misapprehension that we're all supposed to be equal under the law.
But it's not that way at all. That commentator went on to say how that you've got all these experts now coming in saying that the lockdowns haven't helped at all. In fact, the way that they botched the care for elderly in Victoria, it's a similar story to New York. But here they've got all these border restrictions and a total lockdown, and then the crackdown from the police on anyone that would even send out a Facebook posting. And then that commentator quotes this same police chief taking a much different approach when it was back in June. The Wall Street Journal just talking about the pandemic and how the lockdowns have been a failed experiment. It says here, 6 months into the pandemic, 6 months, think of it. We're 6 months into this. And still, it's as if some regions in our nations are even coming down harder. Think New Zealand. Think Victoria. Think about some of these blue states in the U.S. It says the U.S. has now carried out two large-scale experiments in public health. That's all that it's been. It's an experiment. First, in March and April, the lockdown of the economy to arrest the spread of the virus. And second, since mid-April, the reopening of the economy. The results are in. Counterintuitive though it may be, statistical analysis shows that locking down the economy didn't contain the disease's spread, and reopening it didn't unleash a second wave of infections. So in both cases, it didn't play out the way the experts were so sure that it would. If we don't lock everything down, it's just going to spread everywhere. And then when it was time to reopen, led by President Trump and some others, you had the experts screaming that if you do this, there's going to be a second wave of destruction and death. It never happened. And the numbers, by the way, just keep going down. The number of infections, the number of hospitalizations, the number of deaths. It says, considering that lockdowns are economically costly and create well-documented long-term public health consequences beyond COVID, imposing them appears to have been a large policy error. I mean, that's putting it nicely. It's a catastrophic error. At the beginning, when little was known, officials acted in ways they thought prudent. But now, evidence proves that lockdowns were an expensive treatment with serious side effects and no benefit to society. But see, that's all part of the plan. Okay, we've overplayed our hand with respect to the violence in the streets. Now we've got to change the narrative back to COVID-19 and the destruction of the economy. Keep it locked down. We don't want the economy to have any kind of a resurgence, and then blame Donald Trump. Donald Trump, by the way, we played this clip for you a few weeks ago where he said that they're using COVID to defraud the American people. This was clip, I think it's from August 24th, clip 12.
What they're doing is using COVID to steal an election.
Right.
They're using COVID to defraud the American people, all of our people, of a fair and free election. And we can't do that. And don't let them give you the post office stuff to...
Using COVID to steal an election. Look at Nancy Pelosi. We touched on this just yesterday. Got caught by that security camera walking her way through the salon. She's getting her hair washed and whatever she was doing. But the Washington Post, or actually the Wall Street Journal, it said that this is just the latest exhibition of privileged unconcern, because she's been out there as one of the most forceful proponents of lockdown and face masks and salons in California, salons in the San Francisco area where she's from. They've been closed since March 17th. They've been closed almost 6 months. Closed entirely. Nobody can come in and out of there. And Pelosi, of course, she's the Madam Speaker. She's the Speaker of the House. She's basically closed the House of Representatives. I don't know how long she's, or how much of this time, the past 6 months, she's been at home in San Francisco. But for her to claim, as she now claims, that she didn't really know about it and it's really more the salon's fault, is just the height of hypocrisy. ignorance. This montage, by the way, of local media and salon owners. Listen to them as they react to this woman who's telling everybody else to stay home even as she goes out to the salon. Clip 9.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi seen getting her hair done inside a San Francisco salon, something that goes against the city's health order.
It feels almost like a slap in the face.
The inside service is a violation of San Francisco's health order.
I was in shock. So hypocritical.
At a time when that is illegal in San Francisco.
Pretty much pure shock.
Indoor services are not allowed in San Francisco.
Slap in the face to every single person in our personal care industry.
No one in San Francisco is allowed to go inside a hair salon and get their hair done.
Not only that, it was a slap in the face to every single small business owner.
Every woman in San Francisco who's been dying to get their hair done for the last 5 months knows what the rules are.
If she feels comfortable getting her hair done inside of an establishment, then why can't the rest of us?
And that's just the thing. She's there again with a Marie Antoinette moment. She's there saying, do as I say, not as I do. She's different. She's the elite, or one of them. But the thing of it is, she's been, as the Journal brings out, the most forceful opponent, or proponent, I should say, of the lockdown orthodoxy. She's there preaching. She just did the other night. This was, I think, before it became news that she's a hypocrite. Listen to what she said on MSNBC.
So from the start, he was in denial, delay, distortion, called it a hoax, And again, he just would not accept the science. The science that says you must test, trace, treat, you must wear your mask, you must have sanitation, you must have social distancing. What bigger sign of disdain and defiance of science could the president have had?
And she didn't even have her mask on in the salon. And the guy behind her, I guess he was the one working on her hair, he did. Even he had the mask on. So she's just waltzing her way through the salon. And the thing of it is, she's 80. She's in the most vulnerable group. So what does this tell you about these elites that insist that you shut down your place of business for 6 months? A lot of them have gone out of business by now. But they continue, the most forceful proponent of the lockdown orthodoxy. Even as people are losing their livelihoods. And then what does it tell you about what she really thinks about the danger of this virus? She's 80 years old. She's in the most vulnerable group. And there she is, calling the salon, or her assistant did anyway, setting up this appointment, this illegal appointment. And then carrying on without any of these safety strictures that she wants in place for the rest of us. This is how she explained herself after she was caught on tape, clip 4.
I take responsibility for trusting the word of a neighborhood salon that I've been to over the years many times, and that... when they said, well, we're able to accommodate people one person at a time and that we can set up that time, I trusted that. As it turns out, it was a setup. So I take responsibility for falling for a setup. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
It was a setup, just like Mike Flynn. She was set up by the FBI, this covert operation. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Her assistant called the salon to set up the appointment. And now she's saying she was set up. She was entrapped. How do they just keep getting away with exempting themselves from the rules that they insist the rest of us abide by? Except, as I say, in the case of Victoria, except if you're with the Black Lives Matter movement. Then again, the rules are suspended. A double standard, and then just rank hypocrisy. She went on to say this, clip 5.
If the salon is saying that we're able to do this, and they're not, then they should not have said that. and they should not have been open for me to go there. But we trusted a neighborhood salon that I'd been to for years.
Yeah, in other words, it's the salon's fault. It's the salon owner's fault. I guess she owns the place. There's probably a lot of people that work on hair in that particular salon. But here she's disgusted, as were the ones you heard on that montage. Wait a minute, if it's okay for you to go out, why can't we go out? If it's okay for this salon to open up for you, how come I can't open up my salon for just everyday, average, ordinary Americans? People are furious. It's just, as I've said, it's a toxic mix, a perfect storm. Satan's just whipping up all of this hatred, this strife, this contention. And nothing gets people riled up more when they see just how unfair something is. Or how, as I say, with respect to the elites, there's just rank hypocrisy. Our righteousness, as Jesus said, it needs to exceed that of the Pharisees. Those that would, as Matthew 23 says, that would say one thing and do another. The salon owner, I think, was calling on Nancy Pelosi to apologize. And listen to how she responded to that, clip 6.
I think that they that this salon owes me an apology for setting up.
Just unbelievable. She says, this is third in line to the presidency. She says that this salon, she's the one that violated the rules. She's the one that broke the ordinance, whatever it's called. It's law. It's law. I mean, it's just like this pregnant woman. You're going to be hauled off to jail. You go and try to open your salon. Just go and do it in San Francisco and see what happens. See how long you can keep your place of business open before the police show up, before the authorities show up. And yet here is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and one that is one of the most forceful proponents of the lockdown orthodoxy. She wants everything locked down. She doesn't want to see an economic recovery. It's all part of the plan, isn't it? It's all part of the plan. They're coming down to their last hope to try to overturn the results of the 2016 election, and that is to try to steal the 2020 election. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are some of the most terrifying yet misunderstood symbols in Bible prophecy. Many have tried to interpret these symbols without success, but God has unlocked their meaning for this end time. The four horsemen described in Revelation 6 and Matthew 24 inflict intense suffering on mankind in the forms of religious deception, war, famine, and pestilence. Starting at Christ's first coming, these evils have only continued to intensify as the return of Christ draws near. You can see the evidence of these horsemen on the world scene today. This world is groping in the darkness of religious confusion. Wars continue to afflict mankind as a way of life, and poverty and disease are rampant across the earth. Many leaders admit solutions to these mounting problems are impossible to achieve. But God has a plan to mercifully end the deadly sweep of the four horsemen. Jesus Christ will soon return to bring all the joy, happiness, and peace that man has continually desired. To learn more about these sobering horsemen and the great hope that will soon burst on the scene, request our free booklet, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. To request the material online, visit our website, thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
As a sports fan myself, maybe not as much as I used to be, but still, it is pretty sad to see what the radical left has done to sports leagues, professional sports leagues. In many ways, they've ruined some of these leagues. And you can see that I'm not the only one who feels that way just by looking at the ratings. There was a story just the other day that talked about how that the ratings for the playoffs in the bubble, the NBA, they're back in, I think it's Orlando, and they're all playing their games. There's no crowds or anything, but they're in the bubble. But they are broadcast on TV, and yet the ratings are down, I think, 40% for TNT. They're down 20% for ESPN. Is there a connection to these stadiums becoming a shrine for Black Lives Matter? Do you think that's attracting more viewers or turning a lot of them off? I mentioned that article by Jason Whitlock, the black sports commentator. He wrote in Primus, American sports are letting down America. They're letting down the nation. He called out Black Lives Matter in his speech. It was a speech initially, and then it became the article. But he calls out BLM as a Marxist-influenced movement tearing apart America. He said it's seducing young athletes. That's a bit of truth you certainly don't hear, in certainly not in sports commentating. That it, whether it's ESPN, even a lot of them on Fox, they lean far to the left. These are radicals. They're radicals on the court. They're radicals in the TV booth. And they're ruining these sports leagues. Whitlock says sports are now, it's all part of the attack. It's all part of the culture wars, he says. Sports are now in the same crosshairs as our founding fathers, under attack for past racial sins and unappreciated for their vital role in cultivating racial unity. That's the way it's typically been. It's brought the races together. If there's one place in America where you could see all the races playing together, it was in professional sports. Whitlock says Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, but by writing the Declaration of Independence, he made the emancipation of slaves inevitable. American sports were once segregated, but no American industry can match sports' empowerment of black men. I gave you that bit of the quote the other day, but let me just fast forward to the end of his article. He talks about, well, what started with Colin Kaepernick, I think in 2016. And of course, back then, he got the headlines because no one else took a knee. Now everyone does. All this in just a few years' time. Whitlock says the entire American sports world, a culture that traditionally celebrates victors, meritocracy, colorblindness, and patriotism, has suddenly immersed itself in black victimization and left-wing radicalism. He says this immersion threatens to do permanent damage to American culture as a whole. It has certainly undermined national pride. A country that no longer believes in its founding ideals cannot prosper and survive. So this Marxist revolution, you see, it's got its sights set on the sports world as well. It says, in our sports stadiums and arenas, if our sports stadiums and arenas have become the Gettysburg of our culture war, LeBron James and Colin Kaepernick are playing the roles of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson, fighting to divide the nation even further than it is. That's pretty strong. This is a black commentator saying that LeBron James and these others, they're trying to divide the nation. They don't want to see the nation come together. It says, as fans, we can only hope and pray that these feckless leaders will reconsider their embrace of the BLM culture, a necessary first step to returning American sports to what it has been in the past, a force for unity and a model of a diverse and colorblind meritocracy. Well, do you see that happening anytime soon? I see each side just digging in its heels. And the nation continues to split apart. Joel Hilliker's trumpet brief, by the way, the one he sent out last night, about having perspective on America's genocide. Read through that and see what he says there at the end about these millionaire basketball players and how that they're so against brutality, police brutality, and genocide. They call it genocide, but it's not. And then they say nothing about the way China brutally stamps out protests in Hong Kong or tramples on the rights of the Taiwanese. These NBA players, you see, that's a big market for them. And plus, that's not an Israelite nation. They don't understand the spiritual dimension. We've brought out that point quite often before. But it's just, you would think in some ways they'd look at the American market and say, well, boy, I don't know, 330 million people. That's what Michael Jordan would have said in the 1990s. He was famous for saying, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too. So he didn't come out with all these big political ideas and claims. He didn't come out on one side or the other, at least not vocally, because he just had common sense with respect to being a businessman. Now, at least with respect to the U.S. market, that's out the window. You've got to be part of the woke culture, or you may be shut out of the entire league. You may be shut out or kicked out of the bubble. And as I say, it's a shame to see this happening to sports when, if you look at sports, you can learn so many positive lessons. And Mr. Whitlock alludes to many of those in his piece. You look into the Bible, as I said, the Apostle Paul, he certainly brought up a lot of sports analogies to make important points to God's people. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 24 says, "Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain." This is the Apostle Paul saying, look, run in the race to win it. Go for the prize. Pour your heart into this effort. Go all out. This is just one of many references in Paul's writings to competitive athletics. You can see that they make for some pretty effective analogies. I'll come back to 1 Corinthians 9 in a second, but on this subject of running in a race, notice what it says here in Hebrews 12, verse 1, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight," lay aside those weights, "and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." We've got to run, and run, in this case, run with patience. In some ways, the Christian life is like a marathon race where you've got to stay the course, where you've got to continue on, run with patience, and then be ready for the sprint at the end. It says here in verse 2, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God," looking to Jesus Christ. And again, we're in this race. And so he's out front like the pace setter in a car race, in a NASCAR event. Follow that pace setter. Look to him. He's the author and the finisher. He'll lead us to where we need to go. But we've got to follow. 1 Peter 2, of course, talks about following in his steps, following in that example of Jesus Christ. Back to 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 again says, "Know you not that which that they which run in the race run all, but one receives the prize?" He says, "So run that you may obtain." And then verse 25, "And every man that strives for mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." So it is just in the flesh, and like Paul says in 1 Timothy 4:8, I believe it is, physical exercise, it's just, there's a temporary benefit there. Of course, the lessons we want to draw out from this, it's the spiritual that matters most. But God also, there's physical laws too, and he wants us to be healthy and fit. He wants us to benefit from physical activity. They do it in the world to obtain a perishable crown, some kind of medal or award. Ours is an incorruptible crown. Kings and priests for God. I was reading the section in one of the correspondence courses this morning about Christ returning and how that he's going to return with a golden crown, Revelation 14:14. But that he's, as it says in Revelation 19, he's the King of kings and the Lord of lords. And here's a verse where it says, we're aiming for a crown. God actually brings us into the church so he can teach us how to rule. We're going to rule alongside Jesus Christ. We're going to rule under the authority and the rule of Jesus Christ as King of kings. Paul said, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air. In other words, he trained, spiritually speaking. He was training with purpose. Paul knew the course. There was nothing uncertain about his strategy. He knew who the enemies were. He wasn't just wildly flailing in the air. Here the example, I guess, or the analogy is boxing. So he talks about running in a track and field event. Then he switches the analogy a bit in verse 26. And then verse 27, he talks about the training. He says, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. See, I want to make sure I set the right example. I want to make sure that I'm showing you, brethren, the example that you need to follow into. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to preach one thing and then do another. I want to lead the way. I want to be out on the front lines. Notice 2 Timothy 4 and verse 6. This is at the end of his life where Paul says he's now ready to be offered. His departure is at hand. He was about to be executed. And then verse 7, he says again, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. So the Christian life is a fight. It is a boxing match. And that's why we have to be in good training spiritually. That's why we have to get in our spiritual workouts. That's why we have to put in put on that daily armor, Ephesians 6. Verse 8 says, henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. Here's another crown. You see, God's going to reward us for our efforts. All this workout, the training and the workouts, there's a crown waiting for us, just like there was for Paul, which the eternal, the righteous judge shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing. You see, it's not just for Paul. The rest of us are included in this. A crown of righteousness, a crown, an incorruptible crown. Notice what Paul says in 1 Corinthians. This is chapter 15 and verse 54. He says, so when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? Verse 55 says, O grave, where is your victory? Verse 56, but thanks be to God, which gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. God will lead us to victory in this war, in this battle, in this boxing match, in this track and field event, in this race that we're in. God will lead us to victory if we look to him, if we look to him as the author and the finisher of our faith. One final verse. This is actually in 2 Corinthians and chapter 2. Notice verse 14. It says, now thanks be unto God, which always causes us to triumph in Christ and makes manifest the savor of his knowledge by us in every place. Thanks be to God who leads us to victory, who leads us to triumph over our enemies, over our opponents. If you look at that definition of triumph, it says in the dictionary, a significant success or noteworthy achievement, instance or occasion of victory, exultation resulting from victory, joy over success. One of the many lessons that you can learn from athletic events. Of course, there's a way to participate or to engage in athletic events. God's way, like we do at SCP, and I'm not saying that the professional leagues of this world are godly in that sense, but it is a shame, nevertheless, to see these leagues just destroyed by this Marxist revolution. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.